Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Today, Ashley and I will bring you these stories, along with Brian Lynn and Dan Friedel. And John Russell will have this week's education report.
The spokesman for South Africa's ruling party has accused the United States of trying to undermine his country's democratically elected government. Yet representatives from both countries dismissed the comment and say the relationship between the two sides is strong. The accusation came from African National Congress spokesman Zizi Kadwa. He spoke after publication of a story in Britain's Sunday Times newspaper. The story said that in 1962, the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency helped South Africa's government arrest Nelson Mandela. The newspaper published statements by a retired CIA officer who is now dead. The former officer reportedly said the U.S. considered Mandela a supporter of communism. Mandela spent 27 years in prison for his opposition to South Africa's apartheid government and its racist policies. During this period, blacks and people from other racial groups did not have the same rights as whites. Under apartheid, whites were required to separate from other races. Mandela was in prison from 1962 until 1990. He was elected South Africa's first black president in 1994 after the end of apartheid rule. ANC spokesman Zizi Kadwa said the CIA claim is a serious indictment. He added that the intelligence agency still operates in South Africa. We have recently observed that there are efforts to undermine the ANC government, Kadwa told local media. They, the CIA, never stopped operating here. It is still happening now. The CIA is still working with those who want regime change. Kadwa did not respond to numerous calls from VOA seeking comment on Monday. But South Africa's foreign ministry dismissed Kadwa's earlier claims. Those are not our views, government spokesman Clayson Monyela told VOA. From government's point of view, our relations with the United States are strong. They are warm and cordial, he added. The two nations are also major trading partners, with trade totaling about $21 billion, according to U.S. government reports. That relationship was threatened last year when the U.S. and South African governments nearly failed to settle trade issues. The situation led President Barack Obama to threaten to stop South Africa's membership in a U.S. trade agreement. That agreement lets South Africa export products to the U.S. duty-free. In the past, the two nations have also traded strong words. In February, the Secretary General of the ANC accused the U.S. government of supporting a regime change. The U.S. ambassador to South Africa rejected the claim. A U.S. embassy official said the embassy has no information on reported CIA operations in South Africa in the 1960s.
Islamic State militants are again using bombs to attack Baghdad and other parts of Iraq. A number of bombings struck markets across the Iraqi capital on Tuesday. At least 68 people were killed and more than 100 others wounded. The deadliest attack happened in the Al-Shab area in northern Baghdad. Officials say a suicide attacker set off explosives in a busy market. At least 34 people were killed. The Islamic State group has claimed responsibility for the attack. Also on Tuesday, a car bomb exploded in the Rashid neighborhood south of Baghdad. In the past, Islamic State militants have mainly used suicide vests when setting off explosions. But since April, the militants have produced larger explosions with vehicle-borne, improvised explosive devices, also known as IEDs. Some Middle East watchers see the shift from vests to car bombs as a sign that the Iraqi security forces are failing to protect Iraqi citizens. In addition to fighting the Islamic State, the security forces have to deal with political protests against the Iraqi government. Patrick Martin is with the Institute for the Study of War, a group based in Washington, D.C. Martin said he believes the car bombings are aimed at harming an increasingly weak government. He said the attacks could hurt already tense relations between the government and protesters, especially if the government cannot guarantee security in Baghdad. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi has said he believes the militant group is seeking to use his country's political crisis to support its push for an Islamic caliphate. U.S. and Iraqi officials said they believe the latest attacks show that Islamic State is weak and desperate. They said the group is fighting back with bigger bombings after recent losses on the battlefield. Iraqi officials said the latest car bombings have been directed at civilian targets, like shopping centers and other business areas. The group also used car bombs to attack a natural gas plant in northern Baghdad on Sunday. The attack forced two power stations to stop producing electricity. Iraqi forces and the U.S.-led coalition have pushed back Islamic State militants in recent months. On Monday, a U.S. Defense Department spokesman spoke to reporters about the fight against the group. He said IS has now lost 45% of territory it once controlled in Iraq and between 16 and 20% in Syria. Brett McGurk is U.S. President Barack Obama's special representative to the international coalition fighting the Islamic State. In Jordan on Sunday, McGurk said the militant group is now retreating.
Now the caliphate, as they call it, this perverse caliphate, is shrinking. So they are very much on the defensive.
McGurk said after losing the territory, Islamic State is reacting like it has in the past by increasing its bombing campaign.
So their territory is shrinking, and they are now doing these suicide attacks against civilian populations. It's not going to work, but that's what they're trying to do.
McGurk said the coalition will not let up its pressure on IS in Iraq and Syria. He said progress is being made to retake the Iraqi city of Mosul and Raqqa in Syria from Islamic State. But some observers are downplaying the territory recently won by the U.S.-led coalition. Terrorism expert Greg Barton of Australia's Deakin University told VOA that much of the land IS has given up is not very important.
The big question now is, how do you take cities like Mosul and Raqqa back without horrible things happening to the people who are effectively hostages held against their own will?
I'm Brian Lynn.
South Korean writer Han Kang's book, The Vegetarian, came out in her home country many years ago. But the book was published in English only recently. Han was named the winner of the Man Booker International Prize for Fiction on Monday. The prize is one of the most important awards given for books translated into English and available in Britain. This is the first year it was awarded based on a single book. In the past, it was given to authors based on the full scope of their work. The Vegetarian is the first of Han's books to be published in English. She has another book, Human Acts, now available in English. The Vegetarian was put on the short list of contenders for the award in April. Han learned she won the prize earlier this week. The other contenders were A General Theory of Oblivion by Angolan writer José Eduardo Agualusa and The Story of the Lost Child by Italy's Elena Ferrante. Han will split her $72,000 in prize money with her translator, Deborah Smith of England. Smith began studying Korean in 2010. The Vegetarian tells the story of a South Korean woman named Yong-hee. Yong-hee has a dream one night. The next morning, she opens the door to her family's freezer and throws away all of their meat. The book documents the reactions of family members to her new way of eating. Eventually, Yong-hee decides she no longer needs food at all, just water and sunlight like a plant. The prize's judges said the book showed extraordinary poise and tact and control. The Washington Post published a critique of the book earlier this year. It called the story surreal and similar to something written by Franz Kafka, the famous Czech writer whose books came out over 100 years ago. Han speaks English well, but only writes in Korean. In 1998, she attended a three-month class at the Iowa Writers' Workshop, part of the University of Iowa. Han says she likes Deborah Smith's way of writing, because it corresponds with the sentences I write in Korean, according to bookpage.com. Han's next novel comes out next week in Korea. I'm Dan Friedel.
This spring marks the 400th anniversary of the death of British playwright William Shakespeare. His plays have had a major influence on the world's literature and drama. That influence is shown in a new exhibit at Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. Shakespeare was born in 1564 in the small town of Stratford-upon-Avon, about 160 kilometers from London. People all around the world still read his plays. His works have been translated into hundreds of languages. Georgiana Ziegler organized the exhibit at the library. She explained that immigrants to America brought Shakespeare's writings with them to their new home. One of the pieces in the exhibit is a list of the books one immigrant brought with him.
He came over to this country around 1650, and he brought with him a copy of Shakespeare's Second Folio. And that is one of the earliest references to a Shakespeare edition actually coming into the New World. People had Shakespeare in their houses when they crossed the country as they moved west with the gold rush and so on. They often had a copy of the Bible and of Shakespeare.
The exhibit shows portraits, photos, videos, and costumes of famous actors who have played Shakespearean characters. The exhibit also has copies of his works published in different languages. The exhibit even has the first edition of Shakespeare's works. It is called The First Folio. It is a collection of 36 of his plays, including Hamlet, Twelfth Night, and The Tempest. Experts believe Shakespeare became interested in theater when he was a young man. He decided to try acting in London. They say this experience helped him improve his own plays. Experts say that by the time Shakespeare was 30 years old, his plays were being produced. Ziegler said that people like Shakespeare's plays because the characters in them show real human emotions.
Something basically human about Hamlet, who has problems, he's a student and has problems making up his mind, or Romeo and Juliet, who are young lovers, and they don't quite know how to get ahead with their lives, and they disagree with their parents. There are all these stories that Shakespeare tells and creates these individuals who, when you take them out of the Renaissance period, really speak to people of almost any time and place.
Shakespeare earned a lot of money from his works. He became a landowner and one of the owners of the Globe Theatre. A copy of the theatre has been built in London. 400 years after he died, his plays are still performed in theatres around the world, more than those of any other playwright.
This is What's Trending Today. A wild baby bison at Yellowstone National Park had to be killed because of park visitors, according to the National Park Service. The visitors, who were from another country, reportedly were concerned that the baby bison looked cold. They put the animal in their car and drove to a park ranger station. A photograph of the bison calf in the back of the car went viral on social media. Park officials described the tourist's action as a dangerous move because adult bison can be very protective. Adult bison will attack to defend their young. Park rangers took the animal from the car and set it free. But sadly, the baby was rejected by its herd because of the human contact. Yellowstone National Park explained on Facebook that interference by people can cause mothers to reject their offspring. It also said that the rejected calf would cause a dangerous situation by continually approaching people and cars along the roadway. Park officials said they repeatedly tried to reunite the baby bison with the herd. After several failed efforts, officials said they had no choice but to euthanize the calf. Many people on social media expressed anger at both the tourist and the National Park Service. Reacting to the many angry comments on Facebook, Yellowstone officials said that they did not have the ability to care for a young calf. They also said that it is not the mission of the National Park Service to rescue animals. The tourists were fined $110 for touching park wildlife. Park rules require that visitors to Yellowstone stay at least 22 meters away from all wildlife and at least 90 meters away from bears and wolves. One official said that Yellowstone recently added many safety signs that say approaching wildlife is dangerous to both humans and animals. Those signs are written in English and other languages. And that's what's trending today.
For VOA Learning English, this is the Education Report. Learning a new language is a long, difficult process. This process can become easier if you set goals. Goals help guide language learners and give them reasons to continue studying a language. However, if you set unreasonable goals, then you will probably become discouraged. Many English learners set difficult, even unreasonable goals. For example, here at VOA Learning English, we often read emails with comments like, "My goal is to sound like a native speaker," or "My goal is to lose my accent." The problem with the goal of sounding like a native speaker is that it is not a reasonable goal for many people. When English learners begin studying English after a certain age, they are not able to sound exactly like a native English speaker. That is the opinion of Ellie Hinkle, a professor at Seattle Pacific University. She says that people who have not reached puberty still have enough muscle and brain plasticity to allow their brain to control their mouth muscles. Puberty is the period of life when a child becomes an adult. After your physical growth has stopped, the brain loses some of its ability to change the way it controls the muscles of the mouth. This is what results in an accent, according to Hinkle. In other words, having an accent is a natural part of the aging process of the brain. Just because you might not sound like a native speaker does not mean that you should give up trying to improve your pronunciation. And just because you have an accent does not mean that your language skills are poor. Hinkle suggested that English learners should not be too disheartened about their accents.
So there is really no connection between the quality of one's language and the accent.
She adds that there are even benefits to having an accent. Ellie Hinkle is a native Russian speaker, but she works as a professor in a Teaching English as a Second Language program. She believes her accent helps her when she is teaching students.
So I teach MA TESOL courses. So my students think that I really, really, really know what I'm talking about. Accent goes a great deal toward that.
Another teacher says sounding like a native speaker is not necessary. Marlo Yoshida is a teaching English as a foreign language teacher at the University of California, Irvine. She says that improving your pronunciation is definitely possible if you choose a reasonable goal.
You can reach a stage where your pronunciation is easy for people to understand, where it never causes a problem. You go into Starbucks and say your name and they understand what, you know, you give your order and they understand. So that's a reasonable goal, being understood easily, where sounding like a native speaker is wonderful if you can do it. It's not necessary.
So, what can English learners do to improve their pronunciation? Marla Yoshida says that, like when you decide to diet, you are more likely to have success if you set reasonable goals. She suggests working on specific areas of pronunciation that you can improve, instead of trying to sound like a native speaker.
Work consciously, if you're an adult, to change the way you pronounce. And it's kind of like a diet. So if you set a more reasonable goal, then the diet might succeed. In the same way, pronunciation, if you have a more reasonable goal, like, okay, first, I have trouble with the R and L sound, so first I'm going to try those. And then when I'm feeling pretty comfortable with those, I'll move on to some other sound that causes problems. It takes time, but it is possible.
Yoshida added that English learners should understand that improving their pronunciation can take a long time. She said that learners should not be tricked by people who claim to be able to help people get rid of their accents.
It's good to realize that it's not a fast process. Everyone has been speaking their native language for, you know, years and years and years. And it's hard to change. Habits of how you move your mouth are really hard to change. And so don't expect miracles. Sometimes people see advertisements from software or courses that say, get rid of your accent in only 5 lessons or something. It's not going to happen. There are no miracles.
So, what can you do? Start by setting a reasonable goal. Choose one or two sounds that are difficult for you to pronounce. Then, work to improve these sounds. When you have improved, study other sounds. Progress might be slow for you, but don't give up. Next week, we will give you examples of exercises that you can do to start improving your pronunciation. I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.